You ever share it?
No. Oh. I do, actually. No, I want to record.
Record too?
Yeah, it does everything. Yeah, I hope I'm doing this right. Okay. It's recording. See what I've got.
All right, so this chapter 10, Parak Zayin, is very strong rebuke against the leaders of Israel. Okay? You can picture most leaders are just saying, everything you're doing is fine, you don't need to improve your ways. Right? Perhaps the salary was paid, we'll see in Amos, where Amos gives a particularly unpopular prophecy, and the people say, listen, we don't like to hear what you're saying. Go down to another place, give prophecy there, and make a living that way. As if to say that the prophets made a living at this time out of just telling the people what they wanted to hear. Right? The people, I guess, liked to have someone preaching to them, right? But they didn't want someone becoming too preachy, if you know what I mean. So this is a real problem because the people just needed to hear just that. In today's world, it's pretty much the people who like to hear Musar are largely the people who don't really need it. The people who need it don't like to hear it. But there are people who love to hear Musar. They go to Musar Shmuzin and they love to hear, you know. Right? Okay, so Kirafi Yisrael, see? He is using Hosea of a common pun that Yirmiyahu used where the same word to make something weak, rafeh, right, is the same word for healing. In other words, it's a superficial healing. Okay?
And
kind of refined. Yeah, excellent. You keep special note of this. I told you last time about he's going to compare the common act of adultery, which was rampant at that time, with baking, right? And he actually goes through the whole motions of what a baker does. Baker wakes up secretly very early in the morning so that he can bake his bread so that people leaving for work early in the morning can have a bread to buy on the way to work. And then after breakfast is finished, he goes off and sneaks away for a 3 or 4 hour nap. So this is what an adulterer does. He makes sure the coast is clear early on, and then he wakes up and then he has in the afternoon where the husband is away, he's got his free time. So I mean, you know, anyone who knows the ins and outs of how a baker works is going to really feel what this. Hosea is a witty guy. He's rampant with puns and metaphors and even later on in the book where the book just runs off so quickly. Almost every pasuk in Perek Yud Gimel and Yud Dalid is called what Rashi calls Derech Katsar. We have to read into the pasuk. And Adas Mikra just caught it right in the nail. He says that the prophet is using Derech Katzar because he's telling them that we're not long for this kingdom. I have to give over this prophecy very quickly, as if though to say, before the enemy comes. Right? So it's just really, as I've been saying for the last number of weeks, that there's hardly a prophet who dabbles in such a prolific use of the literary style. I mean, remember, we saw what we hardly ever see anywhere in the Bible. Rhyme. We saw a good few psukim that rhyme. There's no doubt about it. Okay? He's a regular Ogden Nash, this guy. Okay? All right, he says, Kirafi Yisrael, as I try to heal, right, to heal you, V'nigla avon Ephraim, Rafi Ephraim, V'ra'os shomron ki palu shoker. There's nothing but evil that'll happen to Shomron because everything you do is lie. The ganav yavo pashat gedud bachutz. Someone will come in and steal into you and strip you bare, and that's Asher, of course. A ganav is going to come in. He's going to take everything from you. Ubal yomru lilavavam kol ra'asham zacharti, and they may even say it, but they will not say it in their hearts. It's an exact pasuk, just like this in Sefer Yirmiyahu. He says, you're all going through the motions. You may be saying these things, but it's not coming from your heart. That you may recall, I remember all these evil things that I did. And because of this, these people will your own deeds will surround you. Right? In other words, you may even say certain things that show that you're kissing up to God, but it's not in your hearts. Asam yisamchu melech. Sarim. We have to understand who is this Melech here. Right? Yisamchu Melech. Rashi says that the Melech in question in this pasuk is the king of Israel. Right? I would consider to sustain a perush that the Melech here is the king of Ashur. Right? And yet, try to figure out why. It's the corruption of, let's say, a feudal system where the masses are kept in abject poverty so that the sarim, the king's surroundings, can have it good, and they're happy to keep it that way. Right? Okay, got that? So, with all the deceit, the sarim are also happy. All the people at the top are made happy with all of the ra and the chachash that comes to the people. Right? And here comes the uncommon metaphors. I thought to be around a little. We'll just get started with Pasuk Tal. Kulam menafim.
Kulam menafim kamotanu boyro.
Let's stop there. You are all committing adultery like an oven burning for the baker. How is that like committing adultery? Alright, so we already started talking about this, the way that the baker prepares his you're committing adultery the way a baker works, that's basically what he's saying. Right? Tanur Bo'er, Ibn Ezra points out, is an unusual form, because Tanur is definitely a masculine, and Bo'er is definitely feminine. Just be aware that there are plenty of words like this in the Bible, about 15 or 20 altogether, depending on your perush. Shemesh is one of them, Machaneh, and the next week's Parsha, Yaakov says, in 2 weeks, in Yavo Esavil, Mahamachaneho Achas, implying feminine, V'ikahu, implying masculine. Alright? This happens a number of times, the word Shabbos goes masculine, feminine, the word Shemesh goes masculine, feminine. Alright? Tanur is one of those words. Okay, Yishbos?
Yishbos me'ir milushbotzei at hum sosom.
I don't know how many people here have worked in a bakery ever, but maybe you've worked in a pizza store. You know, they make these loaves that have to be put away for 3 or 4 hours, right? So he's constantly referring to the sneaking away of the adulterer. They sneak away for 3 or 4 hours. You know, if I remember along the Route 3 on the highway, there was this hotel that had special 3-hour rates. Mm-hmm. You can think along the highway, who goes to a hotel for 3 hours, right? So... I know, maybe a married couple. Nope. But anyway, so milush botseka tchum tsaso. It looks like an impossible metaphor, but it's very simple. From the time that you hit it until it rises, it's put away for some hours. You put it in the fridge or something, you put it in a cold place, right? Okay, if you put it in a hot place that's too hot, it'll rise too quickly. Okay?
Yom Malkeinu. Echalu sorim chamas miyain moshoch yodo eslo tzitzin.
Okay, this could be a description of the picture of the kings in the feudal system. They used to have these huge feasts with their 30 or 40 people, close people, every night, as the masses in their kingdoms were dying of starvation. Here he's talking about the kings, all they're interested in is their feasts and their close compatriots, and to get drunk on wine all the time, and to sit around lotus him and have a good time. That's what their kingdom is. It's tremendous gnai for a king to behave this way. Other prophets speak about it. Yeshayahu dedicates a chapter about it.
It's a disgrace.
Disgrace. A king to be a... Think of a parasha in Mishlei. Mishlei ends with a woman coming to her son. My son, you are king. Enjoy your kingdom, but just be careful. You'll lose your kingdom over wine. And the king sings a song to his mother, thanking her for, and that's Esav's Chayil, thanking her for keeping his kingdom. Who is the king in question? It's all of us. No, it's everyone who incorporates Sefer Mishlei as a musher guide. You're king. You're queen. You're in charge. You know how to be in charge of your midos of kaas, of zrizus, so you take control of kina and taiva, because you have incorporated all the musadik measures of Sefer Mishlei. But wine will bring it all down. Actually, some unfortunately say any addiction will bring it down. But wine is the most common addiction. Therefore, this is the what actually did bring down the kings. And if you recall, a few weeks ago, there's a Rashi. It says by I think I might have written it down. It says by Noah when he became drunk. Remember, it says by Yiskal.
He uncovered himself.
Anyone want to spell the next word?
Ahalo.
There's a drasha like that about Avraham also. He pitched Sarah's head first. Remember that's the day. So Vayiskal b'sof Ahalo. So Rashi there says, I think I know why it is spelled the hay and not the regular vav that you might expect.
Is that going to be interpretation that Chama or Kanan castrated him?
No, different. Rashi quotes from Sefer Yechezkel, who talked about two sisters, remember that? Ovala and Oliva, chapter 23. So he's first the two sisters, and Oliva was Yerushalayim, right? He says at the end of the parable, and Oliva was Shomron. Okay? So Rashi there says, you see, Shomron did not learn the lesson of the trouble that you can get into over wine. And Rashi in Noah says that this Ohalo is a reminder that the fall of the northern kingdom came because their kings had these feasts where they got drunk while the people were suffering and the prophets couldn't stand that.
What's the word after
Ohalo? It's called the Ohalo. Rashi says that Ohalo represented Shomron. And Ohalo, that's the prophecy. And Ohalo represented Yerushalayim. Okay? All right, so Perek Zion Pasuk Vav. Okay, we're going to go back to an image of Tanur. Okay, Sheila, would you like to kikevuk patanur
ligam? Patanur ligam ba'arvam. Kol alei Hashem avayam. Boker hu voyez ish lahavah.
Oh my goodness. How are they behaving like a baker? Because a baker has to wake up very early in the morning, right? Bakers go out at surprising times. This pasuk, according to the Das Mikra, is actually referring to assassination attempts against the king. Okay, he learns this from the word ba'arbam, and the fact that the baker has to get up in a concealed time, so to say, during the night, to make sure that by the time the bread is baked, by the time people want their breakfast, they want fresh bread, that the bread is already. I'm sure you know that. Bakers are always up, they start firing the ovens very early. They're telling the story last week of that the Rav, who used to go, at 5 o'clock in the morning to light a cigarette. Those stories, because he wanted to make sure that the bread had some Jewish activity in it. So he would, light the match for them, and so it wouldn't be pasakum. Anyway, this pasuk refers, according to Das Mikra, of the assassination attempts against the king. And remember, I stress again and again, four of the last six kings of Israel were assassinated by the king who succeeded them. Okay. Kulam yechamu katanur v'achlu es shofteihem kol malchehem nafalu ein korei lahem eloi. I think this pasuk certainly would corroborate the parish I just gave in the last pasuk, wouldn't you say? Right. This pasuk seems to say exactly that they are warming up like an oven, they're boiling and burning against their kings, much like the French leading into the revolution, right? Okay, they ate up their judges, they ate up their kings fell before them. No one cares to call out to me about that. Okay? Alright, so this is an end of a prophecy. Why is the middle of the parak? You have to ask Bishop Langton about that. You all know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, so the chapter numbers were determined by a Christian in the Middle Ages. I would have ended the chapter right here. I have a big stop here. My Tanakh says this is an end. But it's very, very convenient, to use that system. Right? We're going to do chapter 7 and 8 today. That's a convenient system to use. So we use it. Okay. So now a new topic. Ephraim ba'amim hu yisbolol. Ephraim hu ya'uga b'li hafucha. I love this metaphor. He continues with the baking metaphors, right? That Ephraim is mixing it up with the nations. He's learning all of the nation, what the nations have to teach them, right? But they don't learn the Torah. You're great at picking up, what is it? Ask a group of Jews what the name of the mother of Jesus is. Ask a group of secular Jews, and they'll all know it. Didn't we say last? That was in the Monday class. Richard Joel was speaking to a group of about 1,000 Jews out west, and he said, "How many Jews in this room? How many people in this room know the name of the mother of Mary of Jesus?" And everyone raised their hand. They all know Mary. He said, "How many people in this room know the name of the mother of Moses?" Not one Jew in the room knew the mother of Moses. One man came to me afterwards and said, "Rabbi, I didn't want to insult everybody that I knew, but I know the name of the mother of Moses. It's Yochebed.
That's from Septuagint.
No.
The Ten Commandments.
The movie, The Ten Commandments. The other actors couldn't say Yocheved, so they named her Yochebed, which was easier to pronounce. So that's the best the Jews can offer out west is Yochebed. So what it means is that you're so steeped in Yisbolol and your Yisbololut and your knowledge of everything else, right? You know the capital of Montana, but you know the capital of Israel, right? Okay. Actually, I'll have some 7-Up, fewer calories. Okay. What's an ugabali hafucha? Ibn Ezra tells us, what happens if you have think of a pancake. Or think of the kind of, remember you get grilled cheese in camp. What did the grilled cheese look like in camp? Do you remember? Or in school. It was always burnt on one side, not then raw on the other side. That's what happens to an ugabali hafucha. You're making pancakes, and you get burnt on one side, and the other side is not even done at all, because it hasn't been turned over. Right, it's ugabli hafucha, right? You see what that is? So that's what it is. That's an ugabli hafucha. They're meshugana for some things, right?
Half baked.
Right. That's probably where it comes from. If they go to a basketball game and it goes into overtime, wow, I get to see more basketball. Right? The baseball game goes into extra innings. Wow, I spent so much money and now I get more baseball for my money, right? But let the rabbi go two minutes extra for his sermon, and then the trap door opens up and he falls through.
Is there a trap door under the beamer?
I'm sure. Well, if I can use the honeymooners as a paradigm. Remember the I always like to bring this example, the episode where Ralph he's praising his boss's wife to profusely at a dinner meeting at the boss's house. So they come home and Alice says, you really poured it on thick with your boss's wife. My goodness, you had to all night, you were praising her. She says, listen, honey, I'm up for a promotion in a couple of weeks. Maybe my boss will discuss it with his wife, and maybe she'll take him over the top to choose me for the promotion. That's all. I really, it doesn't. So she says, listen, I don't care how much you praise your boss's wife every night of the year. When you're at their house, but what bothers me is that you never talk to me that way, right? You can manage to raise the whatever you need to impress her, but how come you never feel the need to impress me? So baby, you're the greatest. It's all finished. So if you've seen Honeymooners, but the point is that if you're going to complain. I couldn't give you bread and water because it was too expensive. Yeah, you hired Bilam. Right? You had the money to hire Bilam. That's the hypocrisy of it all. Uga b'li hafucha is hypocrisy. Okay? Achlu zarim kocho v'hu lo yada. Other nations, Aram, Asher, Mitzrayim, you're bribing them. They're eating up all your kaychas. Right? You don't even know what's happening. Gam seva zarkava v'hu lo yada. Okay. What's that? Seva? So Targum says chalishusa. Rashi says weakness. And indeed, in Yesheo Perek Mem Beis, Yesheo uses the terminology there also. Usually, seva means old age. Usually, it refers to
pleasant old age,
like a nice big parasha by Abraham, or to knowledge, or to someone who deserves great kavod. Here, according to Targum at least, it means weakness. Okay? Okay, let's continue. Maybe we go further. Here the word for anna, as you can see in the Targum, v'yimach, has nothing to do with the word for to be poor, but it means to be impoverished. Anna ge'on Yisrael, yeah.
The Anan Ge'on Yisrael, Befanav Velo Shavu El Hashem Eloheim Velo Vikshuhu Becholzos.
Okay. I mean, look, what were reactions after the Shoah? Did people, you know, like look at, you know, if this is a revelation from God, this had to be some kind of response to something. Do people say, I don't know if people say that. But he's saying, for all that I've done to you, all the terrible things that have happened to you all these years, and still none of you seek me as a result. See, there, you know, the difference is that there were prophets then. The prophets can point to certain psukim in the Torah that says, if you do this, this will happen. You did that, that happened. What more must I say? You do that, and that will happen. Why don't you start listening to me? Okay. The problem is, you know, as Naomi points out to Ruth, by the way, in the Gemara Yevamos, says that when Ruth gave her that long speech, your people are my people, but your God is my God, remember that? So she said, you know, it's so tough to be Jewish. What do you want to be Jewish for? We have laws that restrict how far we can walk. Where you walk, I'll walk. We have Tchum Shabbos. Well, we have our Yichud laws and our Rayas laws that restrict very much whom you can sleep, etc. Will you sleep? I'll sleep. So she was telling her the laws of Geirus, and she was answering. When she says, our God is not always so fair. He makes promises in the Torah if we behave, and we behave, and the promises don't come true. So the Gemara admits that that's a serious problem with conversion, with it's a serious problem with any philosophical situation. Right? So the answer is, she says, your God is my God. I'm willing to believe in such a God. Right? So that's always a problem. You know, the deity makes certain promises and they don't come true. And that's the, you know, the evil is, you know, somehow there's a degree of what's called Schadenfreude. You ever hear of that? It's a German word that means being happy at someone's bad fortune. So if someone behaves in a very irresponsible way, and then, you know, and you say, all right, you know, you smoked that much, and you did that much, and you're drunk, you're driving, and that, something bad happened, you can say, all right, you brought it upon yourself. But, you know, there are lots of places where we see that people are not bringing this upon themselves. So, you know, these are all, obviously, these are all problems to any believer. And Hosea, at least, is telling them that you should have read some of the signs that other prophets were telling you and tried to mevakesh Hashem, but you didn't. What did you become? Vayi Ephraim ki Yonah. Read one more, please. Yidav. Yeah. Read one more.
Vayi Ephraim ki Yonah, Vosa in Lev Mitzrayim, Karahu Ashur Halachur.
And by the way, let me just tell you, whenever you're reading a pasuk, it's always safe to stop and a word that has this under it, right? And always safe to stop after a note that has this on it. This note means munach. Go to the next word. Always safe to stop at the word unless it's two in a row. There's one place in the Bible where there's four in a row. Sam, you know what I mean?
I'm not thinking. Is it in the Sierra?
It's an Esther. So if it's a munach, keep going to the next word until but if there's two munach, then go to the next word after that. But usually there's only one. Munach means go to the next word. It's not going to stop here. Okay. And there are other notes, but I'll leave that for another time. So he says, so Ephraim is like a foolish Yonah. There's no heart. There's no mind. Mitzrayim karo asher halachu. How are they so stupid? They're going to Egypt. They're going to Assyria for help. How are you to be so stupid? So salam rishdi kelof hashemayim oridem aysirem kashem ala adesam. So, when they go to these people, right, I will put out my net. I'll get them.
I see rain.
Any alliteration? Okay. I prefer three or four in a row to say that. But anyway, that I see rain, the yud, according to some aforeshim, is not I will put them aside, but as Rashi says, Loshan Yisurin. I use a very unusual form of the Hebrew, but it means I'll give them Yisrael. Fine. Oy lahem ki nodedu mimeni, shod lahem ki pashu bivanochi efteim, vehima dibru alai ksovim. That's how I would read this pasuk. Would you, someone please read the English translation of verse 13? It's a very difficult pasuk.
Woe to them, for they have moved away from me. Plunder upon them, for they have rebelled against me. I would redeem them, that they have spoken lies about me.
Okay. I mean, I basically read it sort of the same way. Should I redeem them? No, of course I can't, considering the fact that Hema Dibruah like is of him. But your reading is probably preferable, because it's hard to put a question into the biblical text that they don't have question marks. Because it just doesn't flow. Means not I will redeem them, but I would redeem them, if not for the fact that look what you're doing. In other words, God, let me tell you something. This is this same issue when raising children, where when you if you want to redeem them and make them responsible adults one day, if you constantly forgive them, right? It's such a give and take. I mean, yesterday I was with my son buying a hockey helmet. I had a for my wife. Don't come home without a hockey helmet for your son, because he's playing in the league and he can't play without the helmet. So we were in Modell's. We went shopping all over. We saw one for this man. We got the Best Buy in all the places. We went to three or four different places. And then we were in the store waiting online, and my son was just walking over to the side, and I kept calling him. I know he heard me. You know, sometimes kids make believe they don't hear you, right? So I called him three, four times. And then after the fourth time, I heard him say, what? And then I called him again, and he kept walking. And I said, Ellie, come here already. And, you know, I said, how many times do I have to call you? So I said, I needed for him to help his sister with something, whatever, it doesn't matter. But I said, you know, I'm leaving the hockey helmet here. And I stormed out of the store with him, you know, just to scare him about it. But then it came to my mind, don't come home without the hockey helmet. So, what am I supposed to do here? Try to teach my son a lesson and get mishabera for my wife when I come home? So you know, I must tell you, these kind of decisions are—it's like what Hashem goes through with Bnei Israel. I want to forgive them, like any father wants to forgive his son. He was so upset when he saw me walk out of the store. He said, "No, I have to have it. I have to have it." So, you know, Hashem is a loving father who wants so much for us to just listen and do the right thing and help others. And you know, what's the best way to do it? You know, I assume that Hashem could teach us how to be the best possible parent it could be. Right? Does Hashem make mistakes? And, yeah, it looks like it. He forgives us so much. That's why we become so stiff-necked after all this time. Right? And then after some amount of history, he says, you know, I'm out of here. You're on your own. Right? That happened, it's going to happen shortly after this time, the prophecy ending.
So did you get
it? I ended up getting it. Yeah, I went back to the store afterwards myself and got it.
Oh. You sent him home or
had it there? I sent him to the car. So what lesson did I teach him? He says, oh yeah, he can storm out of the store, and I know I'm going to get my helmet anyway. Right? So, you know, I don't know. Did he learn anything from that?
Did you learn something from it, though?
Yeah, I shouldn't take instructions from my wife before getting hockey helmets. So anyway, but this is what it's all about. You know, Hashem says, you know, I would do this, but how can I, considering what you do? Right? Okay. For those are cool, I believe, and even with all your suffering, you don't cry out for me with your hearts. All you're crying out for is for your comfortable beds. And that's his metaphor in the chapter about adultery, as the pasuk continues, for your own material losses. You're crying over your lost corn and oil and wine. That's what's getting you upset. Not that there's anything wrong with me. Let me tell you, there's a great vort on this week's parsha. I said it over once on a Friday night, I think. The vort says that because of the two cries, Vayizak Ze'aka Gedolah, Vayizak Ze'aka of Esav, those two tears have caused Esav to be successful against us. Now, this is a medrash. Now, considering that...
Isn't that
mentioned Mordechai? Right, and Mordechai also by Yitzhak Zakadullah, right, that he, a descendant of Esau of Haman, would cause a similar reaction, the descendant of Yaakov of Mordechai. But this is a similar point made in a separate medrash, that Esau would be given the power to cause us so much harm throughout the ages because of these two tears. And considering the fact that the Medrash thought that Christianity was Esav and Rome was Esav, there's a lot of pain that Esav is causing us because of these two tears. So I think the Kutzker asked, come on, what's going on here? Our tears have not been able to drown out our billions of tears. What Esav has done to us has not been able to undo his tears. So the Kutzker is very sharp. He shows that the Memra in Medrash Rabbah is from Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is a Tana, the only Tana who holds min b'mino enu batal. Min b'mino enu batal means that if 60 kosher meatballs and one unkosher meatball falls in, so it's batal b'shishim, 60. But Rabbi Yehuda holds not if it's the same meatball. You can't nullify taste in the same taste. It has to be a taste that's lost in a different taste. It has to be ice cream that falls in cholent, or a piece of cheese that falls in a stew. Right, but a piece of meat that falls in other meat that's the same meat. Forget it. Sorry, a tiny bit will make the whole pot aser according to Rabbi Yehuda. We don't paskin this way. We paskin shishim even min b'mino. Okay. Therefore, the question is, why did Esav cry in this week's parasha when Yaakov took his bracha? He thought that Yaakov took his material blessing of the birthright, right? Why are you crying from what Esav does to you? If you're crying because of, like this pasuk, because of your own material losses, so it's min b'mino. You're crying for the same reason Esav is crying. Sorry, your billions of tears cannot drown out two tears, because it's the same thing. The two tears will make its impression, and even a billion tears, sorry. But he said, I mean, the Kutzker Rebbe said, if Jews start to cry because, oi, Masai Timloch B'tzion, B'karav Yameinu, look at Yerushalayim, right, when are we going to have a Beis HaMikdash? When are we going to be able to do mitzvahs freely? If that's the reason why Yidden are crying, then you'll be able to move out of this. It's min v'eino mino. Right? But if your cries are min v'mino, you get the lumdus. If your cries are min v'mino, the same thing, then you can't nullify it. Okay, so let's just go over to the writer. Vani Yisarti. Stand with you.
What line is it?
Test 12, 15.
Okay. Vani Yisarti Yisarti Zero Lashon Be'elai Yechashvu Rav.
Wow. I tried to strengthen them. Right? They didn't look at what my patch was for. It didn't serve to rehabilitate them. Like Yirmiyahu says, "Lashavi kaseis b'neichem, musa lo lakachu." I keep hitting you for nothing, and you're not learning from it. So why should I bother keeping hitting you? Like the Sanhedrin stopped giving out punishments when the people weren't learning from it. Right? So he says that you keep thinking, whatever message you get from history, you keep blaming it on me. It reminds me of Mr. Shimon Meyer, who right after he got married was taken to Dachau. Few months after he was married, and his wife Erna, who's still alive, she's almost 100 years old. She said, "I thought I'd be a widow right after being married." Kind of hard. They were together almost 70 years. So Shimon just passed away. You know Shimon Meyer? Shimon Erna Meyer? No, lived on 92nd Street. So he said that while he was in Dachau, all of the Reform Jews, so the secular Jews in Germany, then they were talking about God. Where is God? Why is God allowing this to happen? The Frumma Yidden was saying, where is man? How are we doing this? What did we do to deserve this? What are we... here all of a sudden, the Yidden who are talking God now are talking man, and the Yidden who never talk God, all of a sudden God is in Dachau. Right? So we'll see. There's a pasuk in Amos like this. He says, Hush! From the Krov Hashem Hashem. Don't talk about God now at a time like this. And I'll remind you when we do that pasuk. What that pasuk is all about. It's a very scary pasuk, really. Yeshuvu lo ol, hayu kekeshes v'miya yiplu b'cherev, sarayim yiza'am l'shonam, zo la'agam be'eretz Mitzrayim. This pasuk is impossible. I don't have to do with it. The pasuk has to be read in its historical context. It's hard to figure out what it means unless we know that the Jews at this time were appealing to Egypt for their assistance. They were doing ridiculous things. They were going to Egypt for help against Asher. They were going to Asher for help against Egypt. They were making these ridiculous pacts with everybody, and they were nonsense. So these people are not going to come through for you, right? You think you can buy them off? They'll take your money and then take you anyway. Right? It says, "Though they do tshuva, yeshuvu." lo ol, as Radha says, it's not with the burden of God upon them. They're like a keshes rimiya. Again, these are metaphors. It's very difficult to understand. What's a keshes rimiya? David uses these two terminologies together. A bow that is deceitful. So it's really it's a metaphor that really needs its contemporary terminology understood. A bow is something you hold and you pull next to you, and it's deceitful. It's not keshes needs to be firm. Any archers here? Hi.
The word for firm could be emes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Like Moses' hands, which were emunah. So this is a keshes that's not emunah. Right? So your officers will fall with the sword because of the deceit of their own speech. This is a mockery that goes down to Egypt. It's not going to serve you for anything. Okay. A shikuma perek zayin is that B'nai Israel don't even realize the source of their punishments. It's what they're doing themselves, that they're there, or their adultery and running off like the baker, as we saw in those various metaphors. Let's quickly try to make our way through Perek Ches. El chikcha shofar kanesher al beis Hashem, ya'an avub risiv al terasi pashau. Rashi on this pasuk refers to the very painful procedure called epiplasm. Have you ever heard of this?
Epiplasm.
You sure that's what it is?
Okay,
well look it up for me. I think it's epiplasm. It's where a circumcised man undergoes an operation to make it look like he was not circumcised. Right? It's what the very secular Jews were doing when they wanted to compete with the Greeks, in order to they were ashamed of the fact that they were Jews, so they underwent this, and it's terribly painful. It ruins you. And all so that we can appear like the goyim in the gym, right? There are other things that Jews do today that are somewhat similar to this. But anyway, he says to him, "Put the shofar to your mouth." Right? Kanesha obeis Hashem means like, be like an eagle to fly over and see what's happening. Because you have undone my bris, and you have mamish rebelled against my Torah. Now, to violate the Torah, to eat chazer, is not a rebellion against the Torah. To eat chazer is a rebellion against a particular mitzvah. To not wear tefillin is a rebellion against a particular mitzvah. Rebellion against the Torah means that they just rejected Torah. You know, they rejected Har Sinai. It's a portent for you know, it's like you're giving up the whole army. Our armor is the Torah, at least. All right, so there always will be Jews who don't keep Shemitah, and there are Jews who don't read on Yom Kippur. But at least they know that there's a Torah that speaks to me. What made those baseball players take off for Yom Kippur? Because it's written somewhere. All right, that person has a connection to Torah. If he had a different upbringing, he'd be keeping other mitzvahs also. All right? Just out of Jewish pride, they're trying to make a statement, right? Okay. I think that the players that took off Yom Kippur this year, they played the night. And Sean Green, I think, even hit a home run the night of Yom Kippur to win the game. But during the day, they didn't play. Li Yizaku Elohai Yidanucha Yisrael. This pasuk is also impossible. It has to be understood with Siris HaMikra. Siris HaMikra means cut and paste. I've given examples of it. If I would give you too many examples now, we'll take up the whole rest of our class, and I want to finish Perek Ches. But Siris HaMikra means when you have a pasuk that you just, it's called like dangling modifiers. You have to move it around. I mean, you know, it's like the shooting of the hunters was a terrible thing, right? Does that mean the way the hunters were shooting, or it means the way the hunters were being shot? Right? So
it's the object and the subject.
Right. So by replacing certain parts of the pasuk of a sentence, I mean, there are many examples of this, but so here, I think the way the pasuk has been read is Li Yizaku Yisrael Elokai Yida'anucha. To me, that Israel cries out, God, we know you. Come on, we're your people. Zanach Yisrael Tov, Oyev Yir Defoe. But you know what? This happens to you when the bad comes. Like I said before, the reformers at Dachau. Now you call out to me. Okay, Zanach Yisrael, you rejected good. That's why the enemy came in the first place. Hamim lichu v'lo mimeni. Hey, Shiru v'lo yadati. Kaspamu zavam asu lahem atzabim laman yikareis. The word laman here is unusual. It doesn't mean so that. No one does this so that they can be cut off. Just the laman means that's what caused you to be cut off. But what is this? This pasuk is an elementary pasuk for the whole sefer.
Which
pasuk? Dal. The pasuk Dal is one of the seminal pasukim of this sefer. What is it saying? The first time when Israel asked for a king, what was the response of the person they asked?
He's upset.
You're skipping a whole book. Who was the first Jew asked to be king?
That was he did that in class.
Gideon is correct. Gideon in chapter 8 of Sefer Shoftim was asked to be king, and he responded calmly, "I'm not your king. My son's not your king. God is your king." And they listened. Shmuel, you see, did not have the luxury of saying, "I'm not your king." They didn't ask him to be the king. They asked him to get the king. But at least they asked him, "Hemi lichu," and they went for an oracle. And they said, "You know, Shmuel, you're God's messenger. You tell us who's supposed to be king, and we'll accept him." Shmuel was angered, according to Ramban at least, because of the patch in the face. "I've been your shofet all this time." He said, "Tzanu l'melech l'shofteinu k'chol ha'goyim." Just say, "Tzanu l'melech k'chol ha'goyim." Good enough. Right? So, you know, it seems to be a mitzvah in the Torah to have a king. Right? So, l'maisa, hemim lichu v'lo mimeni means you appointed kings, kings ruled, and I never had anything to do with it. Again, that's all these assassinations. Right? Hey, siru v'lo yadati. It put sarim upon them, and I had nothing to do with it. Right? And as a result, these kind of things could happen, that you make gold and silver into images. So nacheg leich shomron charab hibam ad masai lo yuchlu nikayon. Right? Your egel makes you mius. It's disgusting. Right? You have no chance for nikayon, which Targum reads as innocence. You have no chance to be naki or zakai. Kim Yisrael, pasuk vav. Stan, you ready?
Yeah, I will.
Would you like to pick up on that? Together or? Want to do something?
Kim Yisrael, who has a shower below him, who he's about
me. Okay, difficult words. Look, there's a good reason why people are afraid of Nevi'im Achronim. You know, these are impossible words in Hebrew. But I don't know, it depends where you are in your life. But sometimes there's a lot of fun figuring out, just seeing that you can work these through. And if you just take the, you know, to work out the puzzle, the pieces of the puzzle, okay? Right, it says, Ki mi Yisrael. It's coming from you. Right? Now, the Radak, this is a very difficult pasuk. So let's see what Radak does with this. Can you just look for a hint? What is the topic of this pasuk? You did it. You determined, Israel, this thing that you're doing. You didn't learn it from God. You didn't get this from the Torah. V'hu charosh asahu v'lo Elohim hu. All right. Well, what is a charosh? Is a carpenter or a craftsman? You a craftsman made this thing, and it's not a god. All right. So by the prophet having to say it's not a god, what do you think this thing is that the craftsman made?
An
egel. A calf. Ki shvavim yihye egel shomra. Shvavim means weak. Alright? Rashi says that this is an Aramaic word. Alright? Shvavim is not Hebrew. And he says, it's very simple. The egel of shomra, you know what that is. The Rav Ben Avot built two calves and put them in the Shomron, right? So not only will not help you, this will cause your downfall. Okay, you're sowing the wind, as the next pasuk says. So, but who is this charosh asahu? So Radak says it's talking about Aram. Imagine that. Yisrael, who harosha? So you know, you thought that it's okay to make an egel because, well, after all, Aaron made one, right? You know, that's a whole different story. This don't bring a raya from that. I mean, that's in itself a pella that the Torah says that because of the egel, only the ones who did not make it get to serve me in my holy Mishkan, right? It says in the Torah. We went from the firstborn to the tribe of Levi because of the egel. There's something like that in the Torah, right? And on that time, I changed from the Bechor to the Levi. And who leads these Levium in the Mishkan? Who leads all these workers? The one who actually made it! So that's in its own. But the people were using this excuse. Hey, Aaron made one. I told you this guy rhymes, right? This is actually a perfect. Anyone know what this is? It's a limerick. Line 1, 2, and 5 rhyme, and line 3 and 4 rhyme. I didn't exactly read it that way because it doesn't seem to have the right mental syllable. Kiruach Yisra'u v'sufasa. I'm sorry. Kiruach Yisra'u v'sufasa yiktoru. A limerick usually has a few more syllables in there. Kama en lo tzemach b'li yaseh kemach u'lai yaseh zarim yivla'uhu. Limerick has five lines. Line 1, 2, and 5 rhyme. And line 3 and 4 rhyme. Five lines here. That's exactly what this is. It's just amazing what's going on in this book. What does the pasuk mean? Is that you'll sow the wind with this. Sufasa is another word for wind. You'll sow and reap the wind. There is nothing to grow, no kemach, no flower to be made. Right? It'll all be taken, it'll be swallowed up by Zorim. Which is a pasuk in the Torah, actually, right? In the Torah, it says, "You'll plant, the enemy will harvest." Nivla Yisrael.
Nivla Yisrael. Atah hayu b'gayim ki kalei im.
Okay. Benezer says that what do you do when you have a kli in chayfet bow? You send it to the Salvation Army, or you throw it out. So the Jews, where in the land where they are, people will want to throw you out. It'll be like a clean chayfetz bow. It'll be swallowed up, and no one will care to have you in the land. Right? Now that's an amazing prophecy. An amazing prophecy, because Hosea is going to establish himself in the coming chapters as the prophet of the 10 lost tribes. This is the last prophet that speaks to the 10 lost tribes. Those who are about to become the 10 lost tribes. Countries that took the Jews in historically, whether they were Charlemagne or England and then France and then Spain and they all at one point kicked them out. Everyone knows about the Spanish Inquisition, but did you know that the Inquisition from England was much, much greater and much longer, from 1290 well into the 17th century, till Oliver Cromwell invited them back in. So Shakespeare most definitely did not ever meet a Jew. There were none for him to meet. So to know about the Merchant of Venice, he was just writing with stereotypes. But the point is that wherever Jews went, they brought prosperity. But they just didn't believe in Jesus. So you know they were devil worshippers, and so they this is what they're saying. Everyone's going to kick you out like a clean favorite spell. Okay, Moshe, you want to?
Kihema alu ashur pere boded lo Ephraim hisnu ohav ahodim.
Oh, vim. Alright, so they go to Ashur. Pere means like a wild
donkey.
Animal.
Isn't it a wild donkey?
Yeah. And you have nothing is guiding you. You just do whatever you care to do at that moment. There's no strategy. Right? You're all alone. There's nothing. You don't know what you're doing. And what do? Hisnu ahavim. Avim does not mean lovers. Avim means treaties here. Right? What English translation do you have there?
Friendship.
Okay. Chol could be the same thing that picks up on that. Okay. Hisnu means they made conditions for treaties. Gam ki yishnu bagoyim ato akabtein v'yochilu ma'ot mimaso melech sharim. Gam yishnu, even if you make these deals with the goyim, ato akabtein, right? How is God changing direction here like this? Talk up saying, although they pay tribute to the nations, now I will gather them. But first, they will be humbled somewhat by the burden of the king and officers. What the pasuk means to say is, as Rashi says, that this is a good prophecy. Radak, however, says that this is a bad prophecy. Do you remember back in chapter 2, we talked about Yehuda and Shomron uniting under one ruler, right? Rashi said it's talking about Mashiach. Ibn Ezra said it's talking about Sancheirib. Unite Yehuda and Ephraim will have to submit before the Assyrian king. Here I have the same thing that's going on. What appears to be, in which your English translation here just read, as a positive prophecy. No matter how bad things get, I will still gather you in. Right? But here, Radak says, no, I talk up to means I'll gather you together to be easy prey for them. Okay? Mm. Like in the Esther story, or like in Poland, like in Europe. V'yachelu ma'ot mimasa melech sarim. In a very short time from now, v'yachelu either means a lashon choli, you'll be sick. Vechila means you'll be frightened. Chil ochaz yom shvei plushes. Remember that. So from the burden of the king and his officers. Ki herba Ephraim is b'chos lachto. Hayulo means b'chos lachto. Well, all right. This pasuk is rather easy because you, Ephraim, even if you would bring me sacrifices up the wazoo, your sacrifices are all evil, no matter what you say, because they are new. Where are they?
They're not in Yerushalayim.
Not in Yerushalayim. So your sacrifices are ipso facto. You have no way to improve yourselves. You can bring all the sacrifices in the world, and it's more sinning. And the sacrifices outside of Yerushalayim, the Torah calls like shedding blood. I mean, it's a waste of the animal. Okay. In days.
Achtov lo. Ravo
Rubei.
Torati Kamozar Nechshavu.
This is a great pasuk. You know, we're called by certainly the Muslims, but even the Christians at times, the people of the book, right? Mm-hmm. We are the people of the book. But we've made ourselves Zorim to it. We've become strangers to it. By the way, this is true about the Vim Ksuvim in the yeshiva world, but I doubt if any yeshiva great Talmud Chacham can navigate through this, you know, through Hosea. But we become strangers to the Torah, to everything in the Torah, right? Okay. So I've given them the potential. I've written out Torah for them, and Kavozor Nechshava, but the Torah is a stranger to them. So the mitzvahs are strangers. Shivchei havavai is b'chu basar v'yochilu Hashem lo ratzam. Their havavai means like a flame. They put their flames to their sacrifices. They offer them. They eat the meat. I don't want this. There's no ritzui. It doesn't please me. Atol yizkor avonam yivkod chadosam hema mitzrayim yeshuvu. I see what they're doing. They continue to do everything wrong. They're going back to Egypt. Right? And that's part of the onesh. It says at the end of the Tochacha, I will take you back to Egypt, the place I told you you won't see again. And this is an important pasuk actually stylistically, because it shows some kind of interaction between Amos and Hosea. Amos was the contemporary, right? Amos uses this line many times in his book as a punishment. He says, Vishilachti Eish be whatever the city he wants to destroy, and he says Achla Armin Oseha. I'm not saying that they were this plagiarism here, but it means that they use similar terminologies. Right? We will not have the opportunity to compare Amos with Hosea, proficiently, because they addressed such different audiences, even though they spoke at the same time. The audiences were so different that the prophecies are quite disparate. Okay, so we'll stop here at the end of Parakhes. Six more chapters to this book, and it's really moving along slowly. But I suggest you again, not less difficult, getting more difficult. Trust me. But I will tell you this: the chapters will also get to the Beis Megimel. Are going to be devastating. Devastating. I taught you Beis Megimel at YU in one day, and it just exhausted me. I'm not talking about the Hebrew. Chapter 8 is devastating, and he tried to figure out the Hebrew. The prophecies are, the things he says that the Assyrians are going to do. I don't have it in the Syrian record that they actually did these things. Syrian records talk about how we destroyed the Israelites, we humiliated them, and they gloat tremendously about their conquest of Israel. But just the things he says they're going to do are just, it's going to be tough to. I'll prepare you accordingly.
I think the language is difficult because many words are used by different topics.
That's certainly
true.
Multiple
meaning to.
Right, but just try to imagine the amazing point of 3,000 years, let's say from Moshe 2,700 years later, we're reading these idioms and we're actually somewhat able to figure out what they mean. I mean, English speakers, all of us, how would we do with Beowulf without any help? And that's only 1,000 years ago. Right? Even Shakespeare needs a little commentary.
There are quite a bit.
The idioms in Shakespeare, figure them out? Not so fushed. I need to read comments. So this is 2,700 years old, and we are able to navigate our way through precisely because Jews have never stopped learning this. We've never gone any significant amount of time without Jews being proficient in this. So I better move on to the next year. But that's a great testament to our literacy, right? And our study of the text.
Right.
Look, throughout the Middle Ages. In the Christian world, only the Pharisees were literate. Right? Amongst the Jews, just about everyone was proficient in reading.